but there are many things taught in the writings of the book that are not true, though in accord with the knowledge possessed by the writers and suited to the condition of the medium through whom the messages were delivered. The writers were spirits who were highly developed intellectually and morally, and had knowledge of the truths to an extent that made what they said powerful expositions of the truth as they knew it to be. But beyond the fact that men must, in order to become pure and holy, do those things which the law of harmony and their natural love demands, they could not teach. Now, while this is all true, yet they did not know of the higher truths that make a man or the soul of a man divine and at one with the Father. 674, and could not teach because they did not possess any knowledge of, and only so far as they knew, must, their teachings be accepted as truth. They were far in advance in their renditions of the disclosures contained in the Bible, both as to God and Jesus, and the final destiny of man, and their revelations should be accepted in place of the teachings of the Bible. They were not only acquainted with the laws of God as dealing with man in his relation to good and evil, but also with the laws as to man's release from the consequences of his acts and deeds of earth, and as to his release from the consequences of his evil acts. I would like to write now, but the rapport is broken. Good night, Job. I am here, John. Let me say just a word. I was with you today when you were talking to your friend, and heard your conversation, and saw the utter want of comprehension on the part of your friend, Colburn, as to the truths of the spirit world, and especially of the laws that divide the mere perfect man from the divine man or spirit. He is so engulfed in the conceptions that he has of these loves arising from his experience in life that he can only see the existence of one love, the natural, and his mind is not capable of seeing the other love, and of course his soul has not the development which would assure him of the reality of the divine love. The mind itself is capable of informing him of the existence and working of the natural love, and as this is the only means that he possesses of understanding what love is, he cannot possibly understand this love, and that soul developed to a degree by the very love itself. He may argue to the extent of the capacity of his mind, and he will never be able to comprehend the love that requires a perception of the soul, and he may remain satisfied and convince himself that the natural love is the only love, and that when it becomes developed to a certain degree, it becomes the divine love, and then find that he is far away from the truth. He must know, and I mean it is necessary for him to know, that only those who have the divine love to some degree are capable of knowing that the divine is a thing of itself, and not the development of the natural love, and has in it not the qualities of that love. The one is of God, that is partakes of his very nature, while the other is also of God, but does not partake of his nature, but is only a creation intended to make man happy. And the Paget Messages 1919, perfect in his condition of the mere man, the merely created existence. I thought that I would give you these short comments on your conversation in order to show the grave and important mistake under which your friend is laboring. He will not easily believe these things of truth while in the flesh, and when he comes to spirit life the difficulties will be just as great, and it may be that he will always be content to remain the possessor of this natural love only. I wish that it might be otherwise, and that he might let go his intellectual belief and hearken to the call of the soul, which when not trammeled by these beliefs is continually longing for this greater love. Believe that I am your friend and interested in you to an extent that you cannot now comprehend, but which, someday you will understand and wonder that such a thing could have been. Good night. Your brother in Christ, John. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, your condition is better tonight than for a long time past, and we have great expectations that before long it will be such that a rapport can be made and the spirits be able to write with ease. The spirit who attempted to write you is a high spirit and was desirous of writing you, and was very sorry when the rapport was broken, as he had much to say on the subject of the writings which you have been reading. I am sorry that the conditions were not such as to enable him to continue, but it is better than it was for a long time, and will improve if you will only pray more and give more of your thoughts to the spiritual things. I wish that you were in the condition that once was yours, so that the Master and others could write you. You may now know, but it is a fact, that you are being looked after with such watchfulness and care that your condition shall not be injured, that no other spirits are permitted to communicate with you, who has not the powers of the celestial spirits. We desire that you shall be preserved for the work which is yours to do, and so we do not permit communication from the ordinary spirits to intervene. Soon you will be all right again, and then the higher spirits will come and write you as they desire. Only wait a little while. Tonight I should like to write a long message, but I will not for fear that your condition may be interfered with, and so I will stop now. But remember that we love you and are trying to help 675, you in every way. Good night. Your own true and loving, Helen. March 6, 1919. I am here, Emerson. Let me write tonight on a subject that is of importance to mankind and one which so few of mortals know or conceive of in their teachings and philosophy. I am one who inhabits the sixth sphere, where the pristine purity of the first man obtains, and where sin nor the alienation from God has no existence. You may not know, but it is a fact, that the purity of this sphere is such that the souls of men find only that which makes a man like unto God, and renders him happy and satisfied with his existence and with the divine attributes and nature with which he was created and which God in the infinitude of his powers decreed that man should possess and enjoy to the fullest of his capacity. I am he whose book 36 you have been reading tonight and who was attracted to you by the fact that you were interested in the book and sought the truths of the soul as therein set forth. The soul is one that while individualized yet is a part of the great oversoul, and in its aspirations and thoughts of those things that are pure and in harmony with the oversoul has a satisfaction that is complete and at one with the Father of light and love. This sphere is one where only the perfected soul can live and bloom and feel its qualities of the divine as perfect, and no soul that has not rid itself of sin can possibly enter. I only know that we who inhabit that sphere have that feeling of purity and perfection that was granted to our first parents and which by them was lost at the time of their disobedience. This soul is very much like unto the great soul of the Father and needs not the qualities that you have known on earth, as the one that causes you to realize that the Father has for man a higher and greater existence than the perfect man. Well, I have lost my rapport and must stop. Good night, Emerson. Ralph Waldo, March 9, 1919. St. Luke. Let me write a few lines tonight as you are in better condition, and I am able to make a rapport with you and deliver my message. I was with you today at a meeting of the New Thought people and saw the impression made upon you by the speaker in his efforts to show that 36, he wrote an essay entitled The Oversoul in 1841, The Paget Messages 1919, God is within man, and that only the opening up of the soul or mind of man to the development of that God is all that is necessary to bring that man into a perfect attunement with the truths of God's will. Well, I have to say that this speaker, when he comes to a realization of himself in the spirit world, will find that God is not in him or in anything that he may have possessed in his earth life, and that his development of the kingdom within him, as he termed it, was a mere delusion and snare to the progress of his soul, in its career through the earth life, as well as through the heavens or spirit world. He is mistaken when he announces that the kingdom of heaven is within him, or that he has that within him which can, by its development, lead to the condition of the perfect man, in the sense that he spoke of. He is following a false way, and all the efforts that he may make will not lead him into the paths that end in the perfect man that partakes of the Father's divinity. He is also mistaken when he asserts that God is everywhere, in the flowers and in the thoughts of men and in the heart, for God does not find his habitation in any of these things, and men do not live and move and have their being in him. He is a distinct and individual entity, and is not spread over all his universe, as the preacher proclaimed, and can only be found by the longings of the soul, followed by a development of that soul in his love. No, God is in his heavens, and man can reach him only by the persistent longings of that soul for the inflowing of his love. These things that the preacher declared were the presence of God are only the expressions of his being, and they do not declare his presence in any other sense than as the evidence of his existence, in his habitation, from which these expressions flow and make known to man his presence, as these things reflect it. I am sorry that this speaker has not more knowledge of the true God, and of his seat of habitation, for then he would realize that these things upon which he places so much belief as being the very God himself, are but the expressions that flow from him. Man has within him that which has in itself wonderful possibilities, I mean the soul. And it may by the observance of the way that transforms it into a divine angel, become divine itself, or it may only by the slow process of renunciation become merely the perfect man with his natural love in a pure state, which was the condition of the first parents. If men will listen to the call to their 676 souls, they will realize this possibility and receive this divinity, and with it, immortality, but without this transformation they never can become other or greater than the perfect man. I know that men teach that there is implanted within the souls of all men, that which is capable of being developed into an existence like unto God, that man needs only this development in order to become a God, and that there is nothing else necessary to make a human soul a part of the soul of God. But in this teaching men are mistaken, and will find themselves, at the stage of their highest development, nothing more than a perfect man. Man has within him only that with which he was created, and can of himself add not one thing that will change him from this condition of his creation. It is true that he can by a right course of thinking and living renounce those things that have tainted his soul and alienated it from the Father, and made it sinful and disobedient, but when this is done, he is still only the perfect man, and nothing of the divine is in him. Jesus was the perfect man and, as such, was an exemplar of what all men will ultimately become, and if Jesus had never become more than the perfect man, he would not now be an inhabitant of the celestial heavens, and the beloved Son of the Father. Yet he became more than the perfect man, and it was only after he attained to this condition of excellence, that he could say, I and my Father are one. For it was then only that he possessed the divine love to that degree which made him at one with the Father. Only he is at one with the Father that realizes that he is possessed of the very nature and essence of the Father, and there is only one way in which this can be obtained, and that is by the inflowing into the soul of the divine love. Jesus could not say to the multitude that they were at one with him and with the Father, for they had only the natural love and had not experienced the transformation of their souls. And such sayings as this were addressed only to his disciples, or to those among his hearers that had received this love. The speaker spoke of the new birth, but had no conception of what it meant, and like many other teachers, in and out of the churches, believes that a mere condition of the purification of the natural love constitutes this new birth, and that that is all Jesus meant when he taught the necessity of being born again. There is only one way in which this new birth can be brought about, and that you already know. The Paget Messages 1919, as to the moral truths taught by the Master such as are referred to in the Sermon on the Mount, undoubtedly they will, if observed in the heart, bring about a regeneration of the soul that will lead men to the glory of the perfect man and make him at one with the laws of his creation. This condition is devoutly to be wished for and sought after by all men. And when they attain to this condition they will experience the beatitudes that are mentioned in the sermon, but this is only the state of the perfect man, and nothing of the divine enters into their condition. New thought, as it is called, has in it something that is an improvement on orthodoxy, and men will be the better if they will embrace some of its teachings. The great stumbling blocks of the Trinity, and the vicarious atonement and the blood would be moved from the worship of men, and they would then rely on the moral truths in the development of their souls for salvation, and would not rest supinely in the belief of the efficacy of the vicarious atonement. But some other things that it teaches are all wrong, and its followers will find when they come to the spirit world that there is a God to be worshipped, and that man has not within him that God to be developed by his own thoughts and deeds. I know that according to the orthodox teachings too little is thought of the natural goodness of man, and too much emphasis placed in his innate depravity, and that nothing in man is worthy of the release from the sin and disobedience in which he is now living, and that of himself he can do nothing to bring about his purification and restoration to his original condition of the perfect man. This is wrong, for very largely upon man's efforts depends his redemption, and as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. He is naturally good, and his present condition was brought about by his permitting his soul to be contaminated with sin, and to become again good he needs only to pursue that way that will remove sin and its consequences from his soul. Man created sin, and he will have to remove sin, and the process will be slow. But ultimately it will be accomplished, and by the efforts of man himself. He will be helped by spirits who are God's ministering angels in these efforts, but upon him depends the removal of that which he created and imposed. And here let me say, that unless man wills it, he will forever remain in sin, and God will not, contrary to man's desires, make him a pure and undefiled being, and man's belief, unaccompanied by striving and seeking, will not be sufficient to bring about this remedy. The speaker is a good man, and has experienced to a large degree the workings of his own will upon the conditions of his soul, and knows that his own efforts have caused him to renounce many things that tended to defile him and cause doubt, and in this condition realizes much happiness, and thinks that he is of himself sufficient to attain to that which will bring him into a perfect unison with the God that he thinks is within him. In this he is deceiving himself, for what he thinks is God is only an unusual condition of soul development in its natural love that gives him a happiness which causes him to believe that God must be in and a part of him. As you have been told, the happiness of the purified soul is beyond all conception of humans, and the nearer a man approaches to that condition of purification of his soul, the greater becomes his happiness, and the belief that God must in some way be in that happiness and form a part of it, when the fact is that this happiness is only that which was bestowed upon man in the beginning. As the soul becomes purer and relieved from the defilement of sin, man becomes what he was in the beginning, and has regained only that which by nature is his. He does not receive any part of the divine, nor does the Father bestow upon him anything that was not his at the creation, and he must realize that by the removal of sin his soul becomes more and more in harmony with the will of God, and less in harmony with his own perverted will. Let new thought progress until men may realize that they are at one with themselves, their created selves, but let it not teach them that what they experience as a removal of sin from their own souls by their own efforts and thoughts, is evidence of a development of any supposed God within them, for it is not true, but is merely the development of their own natural created selves, freed from that which defiled and made them unnatural. The speaker said that the kingdom of heaven is within all men, and needs only for men to realize that fact, and declare its truth, and that then they will become pure and like unto God, and find themselves in the presence of God, and see him face to face. Well, in this he is all wrong, for the kingdom of heaven or celestial kingdom is not within men, though it may be, and neither is God in their souls and capable of being seen face to face. These men, who teach purification of their 677, the Paget Messages 1919, natural love and a superior state resulting from that purification and nothing more, will never see God, and they will always remain in the mere image in which they were created, a merely purified man made in the image of God, and nothing more. The Father will then be the same unseen creator as he is now, and men will worship him in faith only, for their soul perceptions, which are the only eyes of the soul that can see God, will not exist, and to them God will still remain the unseen and unknowable being that exists today in the knowledge and belief of men. Well, I have written enough for tonight, but saw that you were somewhat interested in the teachings of the day, and thought it best that I should write you as to the truth of the subject of which he discoursed and evidently believed. With my love to you, and the hope that our messages may now continue without interruption, I will say, good night. Your brother in Christ, Luke. March 12, 1919. Let me write a line. I am not going to write a long message but one that is very short. You are now in condition to receive our messages, and I wish to write for a while on the importance of knowing the way to the celestial kingdom which has been written you before, but I wish to add to what you have received. You have been told that the only way to obtain that kingdom is by the divine love coming into your soul and changing it into a thing divine, which partakes of the very essence of the Father himself. Well, this is a correct explanation of the operation of this love on the soul, but in order to get this love there must be earnest supplication on the part of the seeker, and a mere mental desire for the inflowing of the love will not suffice. This is a matter that pertains to the soul alone, and the mind is not involved except, as you might say, to start the soul's longings in prayer. When you think that you are longing for this love and have a mere mental desire for its inflowing, the love will not come, because it never responds to the mere mind and must always be sought for by the soul's longings. Many men have the intellectual desire for the love of God, and upon that desire rest, and believe that they have the love and that there is nothing further for them to do, but they will find themselves mistaken, and that instead of possessing this love they have awakened only the natural love, and in a way, started it towards its goal 678, of the purified soul, like the first parents before the fall, and will not experience the transformation that comes with the possession of the divine love. It is no easy matter to have these longings possess the soul, and men should not remain satisfied with these mere mental desires, for they will not be benefited by such desires, except, as I may say, in the way of having their natural love purified. The longings of the soul comes only from a realization that this love is waiting to be bestowed, and that the soul must become active and earnest in its endeavor to have this love come into it, and then the transformation takes place. From this you will see how utterly impossible it is for the devotee of the church to experience this love or to have the longings of the soul which are not aroused by the observance of the church's sacraments, and the duties which it imposes upon them. They may be ever so zealous in their attendance upon the church services and in complying strictly with its requirements as to doing those things which it prescribes. It is with them all a mental process, but the soul is not affected. They may think that their desires are from the soul, and that a response will come, but in this they are mistaken and the soul lies dead. Only when the soul's longings are started into activity are prayers of the worshipper answered. So you will see that a man may be apparently devout and full of zeal for his church and the teachings of his creed, and yet will not be benefited so far as the progress of the soul is concerned. Let not your desires be only of the intellect, but try to bring into activity the longings of the soul, and do not rest satisfied until a response shall come, and it will certainly come, and you will know that the love is present working its transforming power upon the soul. This is all I desire to say tonight. I am pleased that you are now in condition to receive our messages and hope that your excellent condition will continue. With my love, I will say, good night. Your own loving grandmother Anne Rollins. March 13, 1919. I am here, Abraham Lincoln. Let me write a few lines tonight as you are in good condition to receive my message. Well, I see that you have been thinking a great deal about spiritual things, and have longed for the love of the Father, and by such thoughts and longings you have come unto a the Paget Messages 1919, condition that enables the spirits to make a rapport with you. Tonight, I desire to write for a short time on the subject of how important it is for man to learn the truths of God in reference to the plan which he has prescribed for man's salvation, and is coming into harmony with the laws that govern him as the created man. As you have been told, in the beginning man was created perfect and in all the constituent parts of his being made in harmony with God's laws controlling man as a perfect creature, and if he had never disobeyed the precepts of the Father, he would have always remained the perfect man. Now this condition of man is a fundamental one, and the soul is in itself just as capable of that perfection as it was when created, and only by the sin of disobedience was it alienated from God and made the possessor of those things which tend to contaminate it, and cause its pure condition to be overshadowed and dormant as to this perfection. All of God's universe is perfect and subject to the workings of His perfect laws, and when that condition exists which shows that some one or other of His creatures are not working or being in harmony with these laws, it only means that in order for the restoration to the harmonious existence, man must renounce and get rid of these foreign things that have the effect of interfering with the harmony of his creation. There is no such thing as total depravity or original sin, or the existence of any condition of the soul in this sin that cannot be remedied by the application of the proper treatment and the removal of the incubus. An oppressive or nightmarish burden, man, in order to become perfect again as he was before the fall, is not required to be recreated or have imposed upon him that which will make him a new or different being from what he was in the beginning. The perfect man is still in existence. but is hidden from the sight and consciousness of men, and needs only his revealment by eliminating from him the covering which now hides his real self. Nothing new is needed, but only the riddance of the soul from those things which do not belong to it, and then the soul will appear just as it was created, a perfect soul made in the image of God, but not formed from any portion of the great oversoul of the Father. For a long time, now, man has remained in this condition of having his soul covered over by those things that are merely the results of the perversion of his appetites and the animal part of his nature, 679, and it is only by a process of renunciation that these encumbrances can be gotten rid of, and man stand forth a free and glorious being, as he was before the burden of sin came upon him. In this process he needs no one to pay any supposed debt to the Father or to make an atonement for him, but he must himself, by his course of thinking, and consequent doing, remove the things that cause him to appear to himself and to others, the outcast from God's favor. And in order to accomplish this, he must first renounce the idea that he is a vile being and not worthy of the favor of the Father, and assert his belief that he, as the man, is the perfect creature of God, and can of himself regain the estate from which he has fallen, and let sin and error be removed from his present apparent existence. In doing this he will be helped by the spirits of men, who from their own experience know that sin and error has no real existence in the economy of God, but in the living of man on earth, and in the spirit world as well, have a reality that has prevented men from finding their true selves. The renunciation is not so much a matter of the intellect as it is of the moral nature of man, and he, while he must use his mind and its attributes in working out this renunciation, yet must try earnestly, and certainly use the moral faculties of his nature, for the perversions of these faculties are the foundation of his present condition of sin and error. This renunciation may take a long time to be accomplished, as men look upon time, but it will finally come to pass, and the harmony of God's universe will be restored. But in the meantime men will suffer, for this renunciation is always accompanied by suffering, not so much as a necessary ingredient or penalty of the renunciation, but as a consequence of the changing of men's wills and desires in the process of reaching again the condition of the perfect man. I will stop now, as the rapport has ceased, but it will come again. Good night, I am your friend and well-wisher, Abraham Lincoln. I am here, your own true and loving Helen. Well, dear, you have had a communication tonight from Lincoln, who thinks it advisable to write you as he did. He is now in the celestial spheres and knows what the divine love is, but said he wanted to write you a short message on man as he is, and as he may be, and he has told you just what the condition of man is, and how he is still the perfect man in his true self, and needs only an uncovering. The Paget Messages 1919, to stand forth as the being created in the image of God. Good night, my dear husband. Your own true and loving, Helen. March 15, 1919. I am here, George Butler. I would like to write a few lines tonight, if you are agreeable. A long time ago I wrote you, describing my condition and that of the hells in which I was then living, and you were kind enough to help me and bring me in association with some bright spirits who were willing to show me the way out of my awful condition, and who since that time have been helping me with their love and sympathy and prayers, and now I am happy to tell you that I have gotten out of my darkness and am progressing towards the heavens which a development and transformation of the soul by the inflowing of the divine love, leads to. Tonight, I desire to express to you my thankfulness and gratitude for the great service you did me, and to say, that in all the spirit world there is not one who feels more conscious of the truth which your advice leads to in the salvation of his soul, and the redemption from an existence of darkness and suffering, than do I. I cannot convey to you any conception of what this redemption means to me, or of the wonderful difference of condition in a soul that has experienced the possession of his love, and one that remains in ignorance of the blessings that it confers. What I wrote you then, I now repeat, that the hell of a soul which is all tainted and permeated with the results of an earth life of sin and error, is wholly true, and the contrast between souls in the two states of existence is impossible of description.